This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, at the bottom of the hour, I have today an international best-selling author, Angie Sage, and she's going to be coming on to talk about the last book in her trilogy, which is just fantastic. It's the Todd Hunter's series, and I'm looking forward to talking to her. But meanwhile, I just want to talk a little bit about something that some of my listeners have asked me about, and this is, should you ever write for free? Oh, of course, some of you feel that you are writing for free because you put your books, if you're an independent author, you put your books online, and sometimes you just don't sell as many as you think that you're going to sell. And this is a problem that all writers face when they start off, how to get their name out there so that people will go and look for their books. Now, Angie Sage, who I'm going to talk to in a little while, has created for herself a name that the minute people hear her name, in anyone who's interested in fantasy, they will know that her books are interesting and fun, and they will go to the webpage. As a matter of fact, I'm sure that she has pre-sold on Amazon tens of thousands of books. So when they come out tomorrow, she's already going to have a best-selling book. Now, how can you do that? One of the ways is exposure. And I'm not talking about taking selfies in the middle of night. I'm talking about getting your name out there by offering to various publications to write for free. Now, at first you might think, well, should I do that? Or does it ruin my reputation if I write for free? Well, it depends. Of course, you're not going to write for free for a company that has lots of money. But if you are working on a book, let's say you're writing a historical romance set in France in the 1800s. Well, now, you are probably going to be doing a great deal of research for a book like that. And that's part of the fun of writing a book. When you're interested in a particular era, whether the Civil War or England or France, and you just love the research. So you love the reading part and you love taking the notes and putting it all together, and you have your story of what you're going to be writing. You have your characters in mind, but there's often a year, 2 years, even 3 years where you're doing the research and making notes for your book. So then you have to say to yourself, well, I'm doing all this research. Can I use this research in a way that will prepare me for my actual book? And you can. Let's say you're doing, let's go back to this 18th century book set in France. You have probably researched the clothes, you've researched the food, you've researched the cities that where the action is going to take place. You might have researched the churches, whatever. And in many cases, you might actually have visited there because it's part of why you are interested in writing this story. Well, instead of just keeping your notes to yourself, every once in a while, take a look at it and say, okay, what can I do? How can I take, I've done all this research into hairstyles of the French court. Can I use this in a way that can get my name out there? And yes, you can. Take that one little subject and write a story. Now, say you do the hair. You can submit this to all sorts of different type of magazines and offer it free. some of the history magazines would be interested. You can even go to hairstyling magazines because they look sometimes for these little fillers, little short things that are of interest to readers who are interested in hair. And there are a lot of magazines. There are a lot of hairstylists out there and a lot of magazines and publications that they read. And you can try that. Another thing, for example, if you're doing French history, there are all over the country, there are groups that celebrate Bastille Day. So on July 14th, all over the country, you will find little stories about Bastille Day parties, whether it's at a country club or at one of the historical organizations, at a museum, and they will be putting on a little, you know, Bastille Day party, sometimes a ball. I know that in Dallas, they used to have a very big Bastille Day ball, and everyone would come dressed up in costumes. And it was a fantastic event. And again, all of these groups have little publications, little newsletters that they send out to their members. So you could easily submit your story, not just to one of these groups, to all of them. Just take a little bit of time, do some research, and find these groups and contact them and say, I have this story. I would love to share it with your participants, because I know that you're all interested in Bastille Day and French history, and whether it's the story about the clothes that they wore, the costumes, or the hairstyle, or perhaps just some food, some recipes, submit it to them and see if they will publish it. They, of course, none of these groups can ever afford to pay anybody to write something for them, but they do like to have something that looks very professional and impressive, and something that their participants can enjoy. So this is one avenue for you to get your name out there. And all you have to do in exchange, all you ask for, is that when your book comes out, if they would be kind enough to send out a notice to all of their members. In this way, in the 2 years that you're preparing to publish your book about a romance fiction in that takes place in France, you have had 2 years to submit maybe half a dozen articles at different types of publications. All of them, you should make sure that they're very, you know, well done, very professional pieces. And all you have to do is ask if those groups will, in exchange, announce your book when it comes out a few months beforehand. And ask, they probably won't share their mailing list with you, but in most cases, they will absolutely love to put a notice in their publication and their webpage that your book is coming out, and you put a link to your website and an announcement that they can pre-order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And this way, instead of your book coming out and having no sales on the day that it comes out, because except for your mother, your father, your sisters, and your brothers, you will already have pre-orders. And this does several things for you. One, Amazon notices very much if you have pre-sales. So if suddenly they see, wow, somebody has, you know, first say you get 10, 20, 30, 40, you get 1,000 pre-sales, and this impresses Amazon. And you go up to the top of the list when they come to, as you know, when you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, they will make suggestions. Well, if you have a book that's pre-selling, it's set in France and it's a romance fiction and it sounds, you know, it has a great title and it sounds interesting, and they see that you've got 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, you know, sales in advance, now they're going to pay attention. And so when they are going to recommend fiction, the chances are that you will be among those books that are recommended. Well, of course, the minute that happens, and there are people who just buy from the recommendations. I have spoken, I went to a writer's conference, and I spoke to the readers who were there to meet the writers. And I said, well, How do you decide? How did you find this author? How do you pick the books that you're going to buy? And so many of them said to me, well, I first found this author because it was a recommended, because I read another type of, romance fiction, and this name came up. And then on top of it, then later on, once I started reading, I discovered this person was going to be at this event, and I came out to meet her. So it's a rolling ball, you know, like a snowball. It builds and builds and builds. And if you get a bunch of little balls going, in no time, you can have, you know, enough balls to make yourself a nice big snowman. So it's all in the planning. It does not come, you know, easily to get sales. And this is one of the things that, you know, it's so frustrating, because there are so many wonderful books that I come across. And the problem is not with the books, because the books are great. The problem is that marketing is expensive if you want to hire somebody to do it. A publicist costs about $100 an hour. So, you know, unless you have a lot of money, it's not an easy thing to do. The easy thing to do is if you write, write. And if you write for free, so what? It's not going to ruin your reputation, you know, because you don't have a reputation yet. You have to build that reputation. So, you know, just think about the different ways that you can do it. Another author I was speaking to, she's writing a book, and the her heroine is a runner, someone who takes part in marathons. Well, I mean, this is a perfect, absolutely perfect way to get into marketing. I mean, you not only do you have a subject where there are so many people. I mean, think of how many marathon runners there are. So again, they all have publications. They all send things out to their members and write a story about the history of running shoes, or take a particular runner who might not be so well known, but who has done something very impressive, and write a story. And so you've turned your valuable research, which normally doesn't get sort of a second life. You use your research, you put it in your book, and that's it. But this way, you can give a life to your research by putting it out there and getting it and using it to attract people to you, to your website, and to your book. So this is just something that, you know, with all of you out there who are writing your own books, your you know, running your own show when it comes to selling your books, it is not easy. And you have to think of this as a business. And in some ways, you know, when you're running a business, sometimes you have to give out free samples. So it's just part of the business sort of platform that you have to build for yourself. And this is not easy. Sometimes people will say, well, I'm not sure I should do this. I'm not sure if I should write for free. But I don't see any downside to it. It's not going to hurt your reputation. If anything, it will help you and give you a chance to also to sort of fine tune your own talents, because what you will discover when you decide to write a piece about whatever, the history of shoes, of running shoes, for example, you will not only use your current research, you'll probably add a little bit more and have to do a little bit deeper and hone your talent as a writer. So all around, I think it's a great idea, and it's just one more way, you know, as a business of writing. You have to have this lead generation, and this is part of it. So I just want to encourage everyone to think about it and to just have a go at it, because I think you will find that it's going to be useful for you. Now, I also wanted to mention, I've been trying, and I hope I can get somebody here who will be able to talk to us about this NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writers Month, which is coming up in November. November is National Novel Writers Month. I would love to have somebody come on the program who, one, has participated in the event and also one of the organizers. But meanwhile, there are going to be, it's getting closer and closer to November, and there are going to be some seminars and some events. And one of the events that is coming up, it's going to be a live seminar on Thursday, this coming Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you go to the NaNoWriMo.org site, and it's NaNoWriMo.org, and if you can't remember that, just write National Novel Writers Month, and it will take you straight to that site, and you will see that they have a live seminar on Thursday afternoon, October 13th. And this will be sort of your introduction into what they are looking for and what you have to do to take part in it. It sounds like a lot of fun. In 1 month, you write 50,000 words. And, well, we have had some bestsellers come out of that event. So it's not something to sneeze at. It's an opportunity for you to, again, use your talents and also, you have to have a lot of determination, because that's writing 1,666 words a day, which is three times what Hemingway wrote every day. But you can do it, and many people have done it, and there are many winners out of the participants. There are over 150,000 participants every year, and you could easily be one of them. So it's just a little fun project that you might want to try. And if you do, please let me know and send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And even if you start the project, like on November 1st, I think you have to make your submission of the title of your story. And you have to do that before November 1st. And so then they start the countdown on November 1st. But if you do decide to get involved in it, email me. And sort of perhaps midway between in November, you could come in here and talk to us about how you're progressing and whether or not you feel you're going to make it to the end. And we would just love to hear about the experience and what it feels like to take part in this this exciting little project. So do email me. And meanwhile, please go to my archive page at www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And you will find there are a lot of great interviews that I have conducted over the past year and a half. If you are interested in finding an agent, I have quite a number of agents listed there who I have interviewed, and they always are ready to give wonderful advice. And it's an opportunity for you to go over the archive page and see which interviews will help you, whether you're interested in sci-fi or romance. I probably interviewed people from every genre now, and it's just a lot of fun to have a look and find out, particularly if you can find your favorite writer there. And if you don't find your favorite writer there, again, email me at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I will be happy to invite them on. And if I get your favorite writer, a writer that you've suggested, if I get them on, I will invite you to join me in the studio so that you can join in the questioning. And I think that would be lots of fun. So do think about that and tell me who your favorite writer is. I do have some fantastic writers coming up next week. I have two of the Mystery Writer of America grandmasters, Carolyn Hart and Margaret Maron. And so I'm very excited to be able to talk to them, because they write the most delightful cozy mysteries, and they will have a lot of advice for writers on how to build your platform, which, again, as I said, it's a subject that is always near and dear to our hearts, because this is how you are going to turn your book into a bestseller. Now, I'm going to have to take a little break, and as soon as I come back, we'll just see if Angie is ready. I think she's calling in from Cornwall, from London, probably, and I look forward to talking to her. So we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Pat with a Z, and I'm back, and I'm waiting for my guest, Angie Sage, to call in. I'm not sure where she's calling in today. Last time I spoke to her, she was at her beautiful home in Cornwall. She lives in a fantastic old 15th century building. But today she might be in London, or she might even be, if she's on a book tour, in New York. So I'm just waiting for her to call in. But meanwhile, I want to mention another of the Miami Avenue Book Nook authors, Rita Morrow. She has a new book out called Feisty Nuns. And, you know, you always look at the description of a book, the little blurb that they put out. And I just love this one. And it's just so cute. I'm going to read it because it's an example of a great blurb, because it really is intriguing. So here it is. An audit from heaven, a murder from hell, a mess only a psychic can sort out. Sister Mary Catherine Mahoney, MC for short, has her work cut out for her. When a notorious bad boy turns up dead in Miami, the ex-wife turns to MC for help. It turns out that the deceased left the ex-wife an envelope with instructions on what to do after his death. With the envelope empty, only MC's psychic genes can solve the case. Now, doesn't that sound intriguing? That is a really, really good blurb. I think that anyone who reads that blurb will say, oh boy, an audit from heaven, a murder from hell, a mess only a psychic can sort out. That is intriguing. So I would highly recommend that you go and have a look at it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And it's Rita Moreau, and it's called Feisty Nuns. And I think it sounds like a great read. Well, as a matter of fact, I've read some of her other books, and I haven't read this new book, but I'm going to this weekend. And I think the first week of November, Rita's going to come in, and she'll tell us all about it. But meanwhile, I hope a lot of you get out there and read it so that when she comes in, you might even want to call in and ask her some questions. And this is an example of one of the books that's available at Miami Avenue Book Nook, which is a fantastic place where we have set up a showcase of local authors. And it's just, if you are looking for a good book to read, and you should be because this is perfect time of the year to do it, you can get back outside and actually sit outside and read. So go to Miami Avenue Book Nook. And I have a feeling I see my beautiful and wonderful Ed inside the control room answering the phone, and I hope that we have Angie on. And so then we can get to talking to her about her wonderful book. So meanwhile, I'm just waiting for Ed to give me the thumbs up that we're ready to go. And it's always so exciting when I get to talk to somebody from England, because I lived in England for a number of years. As a matter of fact, the first thing I did when I had money, when I was young, in my 20s, the first thing I did, I saved up enough money and I bought a house in England, because I had spent my childhood reading books about England. And it's funny, so many English people read books about America and dream about coming to America. And I was reading books about England and dreaming about going to England. So one of the first things I did was to buy a book, buy a house in England, St. Anne's Cottage in Sonning. And it was a fantastic thing. And now I think we have Angie on the line.
You do. Hello.
Oh, Angie, it's so good to talk to you. It's so nice. Last time I talked to you, well, that's a year and a month ago.
Yeah, it would be.
Yes. And now, wow, you've come out with your third and the final. It's a trilogy called Star Chaser. So I'm so excited to talk to you about this Todd Hunter Moon trilogy, which is has been so well received after your amazing Septimus Heap series.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's been a wonderful experience writing both of them, actually.
Well, you know, I fell in love with your writing. The first book I read was Magic. And I fell in love with it because the minute I saw the title, which I will have to tell people is spelled M-A-G-Y-K, I said, oh,
yes. This
is an original mind. I have to read this book. And it was, of course, so delightful. And Septimus Heap series, there were seven books in that series because of the relevancy of Septimus, the seventh son of the seventh son. And
yes, exactly.
And so it was, that series was so popular. And I know everyone just said, oh, well, let's change his name, Octopus, or anything. We could have another book there. So,
I like that idea.
but you did continue it on by taking a wonderful character, Alice Todd Hunter Moon, and create a great little series out of it.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed writing about Alice, or Todd, as she insists.
Well, she likes to be called Todd, and
she does.
It's funny. I don't often dream about the books that I read, but I did after I read, the previous books. I was couple of nights, I dreamt about Todd Hunter Moon. And it's in my mind, and I'm dreaming. And I'm thinking, Todd Hunter Moon, Todd Hunter Moon. And I'm thinking, I can't be thinking about Todd Hunter Moon in the middle of the night. But I was.
Gosh.
It was so funny. It's just a name that gets to you, you know. But, of course, all of your...
I don't know where it came from, but you're right. It does stick in one's head.
It's like... Well, I don't know. I there's a song that I cannot listen to because if I hear it, it will stick in my head for weeks.
Yes.
It's called Moon River.
Yes.
Don't hum that song to me.
Oh, don't.
Because once you hear
it, now you're stuck with it.
Then you get stuck with it. And so there I am with Todd Hunter Moon stuck in my head. Oh. But it is pleasant because Todd is a great character.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm very fond of Todd. She's been really nice to write, and I think she is. She's a good character, and I think she's a good role model too.
Exactly. That's part of the whole thing, that she is a great role model. Courageous, and well, I think all of the Heap family is just, that's part of their nature, and that's carried up here into Todd, because really the Heap family is a family that is always looking to do some good. And in this case, we have Todd who with the tribe of three and being a pathfinder really wants to do something, do great things.
Yes. I was trying to get across, but it's lovely to hear that feeling I remember having at that age where, you want to make a difference, you want to do something. And so often in the world we live in, you can't because of you're at school and you're young and everything. And it's great to be able to write about a different world where, you know, you actually can at that age. What you do matters.
Well, you know, in this book, of course, Todd must find the replacement for the egg of Orm, and tell us a little bit about the story so that people will understand it.
Well, it's sort of exploring what makes the magic in the whole series, and it's the magic, the power, the kind of strangeness of it comes from this lapis lazuli that lies beneath everything, and what we discover in this trilogy is that it's actually an enchantment, and it's held in place by this big egg of this enormous orm that eats its way through the ground and churns out the lapis. And, of course, the first book, a rather unpleasant sorcerer called Orotan Mar makes off with the egg. He steals it, and the rest of the series is Todd. First of all, they don't quite realise the importance of it, but when they do, particularly in Star Chaser, Todd is faced with having to find it, or having to find a replacement because the egg is actually hatched. So it's about solving an enormous problem, and the young apprentice actually has to come to the rescue of the whole system. And really, to begin with, only she realizes what's going on. And it's her heritage from the village that allows her possibly to be able to do this. So it's really about how, you know, we all are dependent on each other, really.
That's what I wanted to get across. And I think you did. And it really shows that working together and selflessness and having some courage can take you through all the hazardous journey that Todd has to go through and that every child has to go through in life.
Yes, and you do as a child. You know, it may not seem much to the adults around you, but every day at school can be like that. And it's just showing that it is possible to get through it.
Well, what I love about your books, I know that I always think of them. They're books that are really ideal for everyone from 7 to 70. I don't think of them as children's books at all. They're very intelligent.
No, thank you. It's lovely to hear that. And I'm always telling people just that, because I do write for everybody. And in fact, my oldest reader was 85. So, you know, it's many layered. I think that there's things for everybody in there.
First of all, because they are intelligent, your vocabulary is really lovely. I mean, you do not write down to children. You use a proper vocabulary, which is nice, because so often that I find it so frustrating when I get sent so many, you know, books for children, and I really resent when they do not use any, you know, I wouldn't say big words, but simple words that are more expressive, like gingerly. I love the word gingerly. And when you use the word gingerly, isn't it a lovely word? It's a lovely word.
It's a beautiful word.
And festooned. And I didn't run your books through, you know, a grade level thing, but I know that they are at a level that, you know, kids can read them, because just in the way you write, people, they understand when you say something's festooned. And yet adults will feel just as comfortable, you know, wow, this is a highly intelligent writer we have here.
Oh, that's so nice. I think as long as the word is in context.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have to exactly know what it means. You get a feel for it.
That's true. And children appreciate that. I think children, when I was young, I didn't want to read, you know, we had in America, they had Tom and Jane books. Tom said hi,
oh, yes.
Jane said bye, you know, that kind of thing. I finished those when I was 3 years old. You know, I think it's so awful when they do that, and they do really in so much of the literature that is given to children in schools is so awful.
You're so right. And there's so many now, so many parameters that they have to fit into, and they're not allowed to read this until they've read that. And yeah, reading should be an adventure once you've got the basics.
Exactly. Well, I mean,
off you go.
One of my favorite things was my parents, and I was raised in a very small town in northern Michigan, and there wasn't a library, but my parents had won a dictionary in a dance contest when they were going together. And so that was sort of a pride of place, this nice big Webster dictionary on a stand, and that's what their prize was. And they were always sorry that they didn't win first prize, which was a trophy. And I was always so happy that they won the dictionary. So that was like the book that we went to if we were reading a book. And of course, I was reading at a very young age, and I was reading every book ever written, you know, in England, because I was, Dickens and Jane Austen and everybody. So having that dictionary was the greatest thing for me. So I looked it up, and I think it's fantastic with your vocabulary.
Oh, thank you. Words are just there to be. If you don't know what they mean, it doesn't always matter. It's the feel of them and the feeling they give you. You know, good words give you that feeling.
They do, and as I said, and you play with words so beautifully, and whether it's in all the titles of the Septimus Heap books, magic and flight and physic and siren, where you use Old English spelling or maybe even spelling that you just make up, but you make it so real.
Oh, thank you. I do like messing about with the spelling sometimes. I think it's a good thing to do.
Well, I think it gives them. I think when you write magic the way that you do, it gives it a more exciting, thrilling aspect. And yes, it's not something simple. It's something really exciting. So Now,
yeah, oh, that's great.
Well, last time I spoke to you, you didn't have a web page. But since then...
I do now.
Yes, you do. And it is a delightful web page.
Oh, thank you. And very it's, simple, but
well, no, it's,
people can get in touch with me on
that's
it.
Right. It's, and it's called AngieSage.com. But what I love about it, it has photos of you when you were little. And
yes.
I was
my first day at school.
Yes. Well, I was telling someone, you know, that I was going to be talking to you, and I said, you know, she's one of these writers. Yeah, I often ask writers, you know, when did you start writing? Well, I think you were writing forever, you know, and that's partly because your dad was in publishing. And
yeah.
did he really bring you blank books with blank pages?
He did. He
oh.
was on the production side,
oh.
so he and they were doing art books, so he would bring the most beautiful books back, and I just got to draw. I drew, I must say. I had more trouble with words, but drawing was fantastic. I just sat and drew stuff.
So you were filling up books.
I was very lucky.
Very lucky, very lucky. And, you know... and of course, you yourself became quite an illustrator.
Yeah, I began, and then I realized that I could tell more stories with words. I think it felt better for me to do that.
Now, one of the nice things on your webpage, I love your writer's pie. I've never seen somebody do it like that, and I thought, oh, that well, of course, it's part of your whole. Being so clever and being so I just, you know, I just love the way you use words. And so the minute I saw writer's pie, I said, ooh, that's going to be delicious.
I think it's nice to talk about writing to kids who have got that feeling they want to write and to take away the mystique and the mysteriousness about it, you know?
Well, I think it's good advice, not just for kids, because for all writers, your advice there is excellent. And you talk about you know, what it takes to be a writer.
Yes, yes.
Now,
it's all kinds of stuff. It's all in the pie.
It's all in the pie. That's right. And you make a tasty pie. So that's so I want to. Recommend that all of my listeners have to go to your web page and have a look at it, and then of course they'll find out that you live in a beautiful place. Tell us a little bit about it, because it really is fantastic.
Well, it's a big old drafty house. It's a lovely old place. It probably goes back to about 1200, and we discovered a painting of Henry VIII under some plaster. About 5 years ago.
Wow.
So it really is quite a mysterious place, actually. And it has the look of a castle about it, I must admit. It's got stone mullion windows and corridors, and it's just an exciting house to live in.
And
but the most exciting thing was finding Henry.
Absolutely.
Just sitting there waiting for us.
As you keep remodeling and fixing things up, you'll probably run into maybe a treasure chest. Who knows?
Wow.
Did Henry VIII sleep there?
He didn't, but it was his. It was a church house, and so we think it was put on the wall as a symbol of loyalty to him, because he declared himself head of the church. At that point, so I think that's probably what it was all about. But
well,
he never ventured quite that far down.
Well, I mentioned to you that with my love of reading British novels, the first thing I did when I had $20,000 in those days, $20,000 American, I bought a cottage called St. Anne's in Sonning. And
did you?
Yes, that was the first thing I did. And I think I mentioned to you that I bought it, that the contractor I hired to fix it up announced to me that there was good news and bad news and really bad news. And the good news was that I had dry rot, which he could get rid of. The bad news I had
that
wet rot.
Good news.
That was the good news. The dry rot was easy to get rid of. The bad news was the wet rot would take a little bit longer. But the really bad news, or he thought it was really bad news, was that there was a 40-foot hole underneath my living room floor.
A 40-foot hole.
Straight down. I mean, just, he lifted up the floorboards and down. It's just a black hole. And I'm,
whoa.
Yes. And I said, oh, that's the bad, bad news. He said, well, you know, we have to fill that up because anytime, like, I think because the floorboards were already had dry rot and wet rot, there was a good chance I could land. I could land up down there. But again, this was thanks to Henry VIII because it was one of the places where there was a tunnel to the Thames for the you know. So it was really exciting.
That's fantastic. So did you ever go down it?
No, I didn't go down it, but they blocked it up in a way that they someday could open it up and go actually down and search into the tunnels. Yes, if somebody had money to do it. I never, or courage, I suppose, too. I didn't have either one, so but it was fun. And so I know about drafty houses in England.
You do, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Especially with a 40-foot hole underneath your floor.
Exactly, exactly.
Very drafty.
But it's so wonderful to think of you there in Cornwall, and it, of course it's a perfect place for you. I mean, it's just like... Okay,
yes.
That was the place that you had to land up with all of your magic world that you create in your books.
It was
meant to be. And I have to ask you, because I hadn't known this last time I talked, do you actually have a boat?
Yes.
Called Muriel?
We have an old fish boat called Annie.
Called Annie.
And she's lovely, yes. She's called Annie, and she appears in... one of the books. She's Sally Mullins' new boat, actually. And I would try and put my boats in the book. I have Muriel as well, but she now lives on the Isles of Scilly. But Annie's a lovely boat.
Well,
she's down on in Cornwall.
Well, I think it's just so lovely what you have created. The entire world that you have created, and you know, it's magical. And I'm sure Star Chaser is going to be a big hit. I know that people were, I had read that people were already pre-ordering it 6 months ago.
Yes.
Or even right after the, they finished the last one, they were already saying, where's the next one? And where's the next one? So what's coming up after this? Because this was a trilogy. Oh, my gosh. Now we need something new.
Yes.
What's next?
I'm just having a little foray into a different world, a little bit of sci-fi. It's somebody called Maximilian Fly, and he is not entirely human, and it's just, an idea I had that came to me, and I thought, I want to write this. And then I'll probably move on to some new other world. But I don't ever want to leave Septimus, and I do have some ideas for just exploring some of the main characters. I'd like to write about Marcia a little bit more. I'd like to write for us grown-ups a little bit with it and just explore how they get on, and there's incidents in their lives that I'd like to just, you know, discover a little bit about.
Well, I know.
That's for later.
Well, I know that, you know, I live here in Florida, and of course we have just down the road, we have Orlando, and we have Harry Potter's world. But but I've always thought that... that there should be a Septimus Heap world, and I think eventually, you know, the the people in
Hollywood.
Yes, the people in Hollywood will get their act together, because I think your books are just made for the screen.
You know what? Yeah, it is, and I think what it's really made for is a TV series where we can just explore all the bits. There's so much to it that I'd love a box set, Septimus Heap. I think that would be brilliant.
Well, I think it would be too, and I hope I'm all for it, and I'm hoping that it'll come about, because I just want to encourage people to, you know, get the books, and they're very visual. You write, as I said, when one is reading your books, one gets into this world, and they even get into your dreams. So
they do. Yes, I try and write down what I see.
And you do it beautifully, Angie. So I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. And I want to tell everyone to go and find your books online and to order the new book. And then we'll wait anxiously for Maximilian Fly. And it's just wonderful to talk to you. I always love to hear your voice, which is so delightful. And to think of you there in Cornwall and in your magical world.
Well, thank you so much. It's just been a real joy to talk to you. It's been lovely.
Okay, thanks. Thanks again for joining me today. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Well, I really enjoy her books. You know, they're standalone, so you don't have to read right from the beginning. Although, I would recommend, if you have kids in your life and just yourself, if you start with the Septimus Heap books, because, as I said, she really has this fantastic ability to create characters and create a world, and it's not easy because she has a lot of details. She has amazing details in her book, everything from Wolverine fur to all of her fantastic words that she creates. It's just so much fun to read her books. So, I had never thought of her as now going into the future, and it's going to be fun to see what she does with sci-fi. So I just want to tell everyone that on Thursday I'm going to have Bob Tannenbaum back. He's going to be talking not just about his recent books, but we're also going to talk about The Law and about how he has used all of his knowledge of legal procedures as the assistant DA in New York City for many years, and how he uses that in his books, and how you can do some of your research when you need to do a legal book. So it's going to be lots of fun to talk to Bob Tannenbaum on Thursday. Now, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So join me on Thursday for Joy on Paper at 11 o'clock, when I will be talking to Bob Tannenbaum. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Say something nice to somebody today, and see you on Thursday. Bye for now.